This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm going to be with you for about an hour-ish, alongside my friends, sat over there somewhere on the other side of the internet. I've got Arif Ruse. He's that man with the news. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, Richard. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Arif, and hello, Mustang Bradbury.
Why is he saying that, you might ask? I got to play in one yesterday.
I heard you drove a Mustang.
I can't say that live because technically, but you know what I am doing this Saturday? I will be sat in a room for 8 hours in Charas as somebody talks to me about the rules of the road.
Yay!
Anyway, enough about that. What have we got in terms of news, Mr. Arif Ruse?
First off, congratulations, Richard Bradbury. You're finally going to drive a car legally. But as we all know, the MCO, at least in our state, has been extended for KL, Selangor, JB and Penang. We're still limited to the MCO where all the other states are CMCO or RMCO. As usual, the rules, I mean, it's confusing as always, but we're allowed to eat at restaurants now, 2 people per table. They're telling us no interstate travel still, but we're free to travel outside of 10 kilometers, meaning I can still go to Putrajaya if I wanted to.
Maybe you want to go to that mall over there, Arif, you know.
Roadblocks will still be enforced despite all of this, and it's still 2 people per car. So I guess they will be checking up on these things. Because of roadblocks, everybody's complaining about how it turns from 4 lanes to 1 lane and everybody's stuck there for 2 hours.
Yes.
I think that is their way of saying don't drive around unnecessarily.
Yeah. You know? I got caught in 2, actually, on the way to the office this morning.
In your Mustang or in your BMW?
In my taxi.
Okay.
Just to be clear.
Another thing I've noticed while filling up at the pump this week is that the fuel prices are almost kind of back to normal. It's 1 ringgit 96 cents this week, which is 12 cents up from last month. And it's getting expensive again.
Dun, dun, dun.
Anyway, for the real news, there was a big win for the Lemon Law. And a Lemon Law is something that we've talked about at least once a year. Daniel, tell us more about it because it's quite a big, big win.
Okay. Fantastic news for a customer who bought himself a 2013 Volkswagen Polo sedan. I'm not just pinpointing the fact that Volkswagens have problems. All car brands, almost all car brands, Japanese, Korean, American, German, French, Italian, they all have problems one or the other. And a lot of it comes down to, I think, overcomplicated electronics, overcomplicated mechanical items. And then the biggest problem is after sales. We've had a big after sales issue in this country for many years. And this is why it continues, because there's no lemon law. So what's a lemon law? It's not something that you drink, or it's not something that, you know, you go and buy to say, okay, it's lemon and it's the law. No. It's a term that people like to use and say, oh, you know, that car is a lemon. That means that car is useless. The lemon law also applies to consumer goods like buying an AC, buying a refrigerator, buying an oven, you know, buying a handphone, anything, a TV, a radio, you know, whatever you buy. If it doesn't work and it doesn't work properly and if it's not looked after by the after sales team, there should be a recourse of getting your money back or getting a replacement item, right?
Yep, totally.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Richard, you have this in UK, right?
We do indeed, sir.
Yes. And in most developed countries, like the UK, you have this, and this law is very strict. And sometimes it's room for abuse by certain people, which we all know about. But in Asia, recently, Singapore initiated the lemon law. And it was a great thing because then consumers knew if they bought something, doesn't matter where it came from, whether it's a small shop or a big store or, you know, like a chain store, if it's not right, you take it back, you either get your money back, you get a replacement, or it's fixed and returned to you properly. So here's what happened. This guy, under a company, bought a Volkswagen Polo sedan in 2013 for almost 100,000 ringgit. At that time, it was fully imported, bought it, and then he found the car had some trouble with it. He sent it back to the dealer. The dealer sat on it. Whether he was, you know, delayed in getting the parts or delayed in doing the car, or maybe there were just too many cars with this problem, he did not look after the customer. So after a while, the customer had to go and rent a car, because the primary reason for buying this car under his company was, I mean, this is a, you know, a, I think a guy with just a small company, and he put his wife's car under the company. So the car was purchased for his wife to transport his children to and fro school and to do errands and to run about. Now, if you can't do that with the car, what do? You go and rent a car because your car is sitting in the workshop.
Mm.
So he rented a car for 200 ringgit a day. Almost 3 years later,
wow,
he gets his car back. Now, the problem is not just one item that was wrong with the car. It started with, you know, engine mountings. Then, of course, the very famous Volkswagen gearbox issue. And then they had problems with the car battery. And then the car tires. And then the brake disc, you know, juddering. Can you believe it? The seat, the driver's seat, could not lock it in place. So it's just sliding up and down like like a rocking chair.
That's a genuine safety issue.
Yes. Then they had aircon issues. Now, what surprised me is, over the years, we've had a lot of people complaining about Volkswagen issues and after sales. The same goes for other brands. I don't want to mention other brands, but it's not just Volkswagen. Trust me, there have been a lot of brands. And we have had numerous legal letters sent to us to keep quiet about this. Now, this time around, the lawyer who fought this case fought it very well, and the judge gave in to the plaintiff, and the defendant is now appealing in a higher court. For the judge to give this ruling and say, yes, you have been, you know, treated badly, treated wrongly, not been looked after by your dealer and everything else, this is landmark. Because why? Now you're opening a whole can of worms.
Mm.
You're telling every car owner out there who's had this problem for the longest time, hey, someone is out there looking after you, and you can get your money back or get your car fixed.
What do they call it? Legal precedence?
Like a precedent, yes, correct.
Precedent, yeah.
So it's good news for car owners with real problems. Not, you know, those are going to take advantage of this.
Yeah.
But it's taken 8 years to get to this point, though.
Yeah. Mm. So some of us friends, we're talking amongst ourselves, because I know people with car problems from also Volkswagen and from other brands. And, you know, this is the funny thing. We've thought to ourselves, probably this lady judge, okay, I'm going to mention it, Sessions Court Judge Mabel Sheila Mutaya. Probably she had a lemon car before. Probably a member of her family, or maybe a neighbor, or, you know, someone close to her had a lemon car. And then she saw the injustice that was going on in Malaysia. And she said, I'm going to make things different. I'm going to change things and give it in. So now, after writing up this article and putting it up and mentioning it and everything else, it's gone like wildfire. A lot of people are contacting me, asking me, who's the lawyer? You know, can we do the same thing? My car has been stuck for 6 months. My car has been stuck for 8 months. And this is coming from all kinds of other brands, not just Volkswagen. But here's the thing that I'm really, really amazed about. The only motoring portal that highlighted it is DSF.
Troublemaker la.
No la. Why?
Like us, you know, I mean, we would normally take on these topics mainly because we don't have, you know, we don't seek those kind of sponsorships. But like, it's very difficult to talk about, mainly because it's such a hard thing to fight all the time.
Exactly. Fighting it costs money. You know, you go and see a lawyer to open up the file, you have to take on money. Now, for a premium car owner, they will do it because why? I've already purchased a premium car. I want to be looked after. For this person, I think it was just frustration. I mean, you know, even though the car costs just below 100,000 ringgit, but the moment you can't use it, and it's not just one problem, it's a combination of problems that just doesn't make sense. So obviously your car is a lemon, you know, it's a defective vehicle on so many levels. So you should be looked after. And for the dealer to ignore, that is, to me, is just not on. Because first of all, the dealership has already closed a few outlets. That's number one. Number two, this dealership is not the first time they're having this problem. I personally have had problems with this dealership, you know, with relatives' cars. And they seem to just not bother to look after the customer. Or maybe the principal, the car manufacturer, the brand owner is telling them, keep quiet, don't do anything about this. Now, I'm not here to speculate. I'm not here to blame anyone. But listen, somebody here is seriously at fault. And remember this, the DSG issue was a global issue. And I remember at one time in China, they made Volkswagen recall all the cars and fix it. But it never happened in Malaysia.
Yeah, actually, come to think of that.
In 2013, China forced Volkswagen to actually change all those cars, recall all those cars and fix it. So why was it never done in Malaysia? Are we a dumping ground?
We'll let you leave that hanging out there on a thread.
Okay.
But no, I think you're right to highlight it, Daniel. And like Arif kind of alluded to, perhaps the reason that DSF is the only portal to highlight it, is that some of these other portals, websites or whatever, may rely on sponsorship from these particular manufacturers.
Yes. I mean, two news outlets have highlighted it, but in terms of automotive portal, I've still not seen anyone else.
Mm. On that note, shall we move along to some car launches?
Yes, we should.
You're very brave, Daniel. You know.
Ooh, thank you.
What have we got, Arif?
This one is quite interesting. Proton, tomorrow morning, Thursday, 18th of February, is going to be launching 4 special editions. And this comes on the back of all 1,100 Saga Anniversary Edition selling out in 5 days. So I guess they decided there is demand for special Protons after all. But we'll be getting the Persona and Exora Black Edition and the Iris and Saga R3 Limited Edition. And people are saying from the spice shots, it looks like it's just going to be gloss black paint with yellow accents, just like the Saga Anniversary Edition, which, you know, it made the car look pretty good. Apparently, the Iris and Saga R3 Limited Edition will both showcase the number 83 and 81, just stickers of those numbers on the cars, because they had some success during the Sepang 1,000-kilometer endurance race, and they want to make it an homage to that. But I haven't heard anything drastic in terms of this car. It just looks like visual updates. We spotted some new wheels on the Iris. We got more aggressive body kit, new rear wing, lip spoilers, which makes the car look really, really cool. But we're probably not going to see any changes in terms of engine, suspension, interior. You know, I keep thinking a lightweight, stripped-down Iris or Proton Saga would be pretty cool, you know? Just with a roll cage in there, 2 Recaro seats. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, I think it's just going to be a nice paint job and stripes, and that's about it.
Okay, let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll move on to our global car launches. We do have a new Mitsubishi Outlander to talk about when we come back. A quick break here on Cruise Control, that car show here on BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Cruise Control. I'm on the phone with Arif Ruse, that man with the news over there.
Hello, everybody.
And Daniel Fernandez, that man with a website named after him, dsf.my or something.
Good evening, everybody, and hello, Arif. Hello, Mr. Ford Mustang Bradbury.
Right, enough of that. Talk us through this new Mitsubishi Outlander. It looks pretty cool.
I think it looks really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is weird because, you know, new Mitsubishis kind of, most of the time, have been a lot of misses.
Or lots of mitzes.
Yes.
Go on. Yeah, we'll give you that.
Well, it's good looking on the outside, it's good looking on the inside. So I think this one could sell very well. Problem is, will they bring it to Malaysia? With our local assembly, there's no chance of this new Outlander being launched here.
I'd say it's a departure from the old Mitsubishi Outlander, because the old Outlander was kind of, you know, simplistic, I would say.
Right.
They still had these big, huge garing designs. On the inside, it was still very plasticky and everything. But this new car has a lot of interesting stuff. For starters, you get a new 2.5-liter four-cylinder with a CVT gearbox that simulates an 8-speed automatic transmission. You have a digital speedo. You get a big-ish 9-inch infotainment screen and a shifter and terrain setting knob that you might find in a Land Rover, which is pretty interesting. Yeah. You have the option to buy the car with a diamond-pleated upholstery, which looks like leather, and you even get to tick a box for the option of a 10-speaker Bose system. So it's quite fancy.
They're appealing to a certain demographic there, I would say.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it'll do really well here because it looks great. But again, without local assembly, how are they going to compete with what's coming out of Proton and Geely right now?
Yeah, yeah.
It's from the looks of it, would be like a 210,000, 220,000 ringgit car.
Yeah, right? It has to be below 150 to 160 to make any dent in our sales market.
That ain't going to happen.
Yep.
Well, we have another car that we want to talk about, and it's called TOG. It's a Turkish automaker. And apparently, they will launch an electric SUV next year, which is designed by Pininfarina and will offer 500 kilometers of range and almost drive itself. I've taken a bit of an excerpt from the press release here, which was cited by Daniel. There is no name for the car, but apparently it will, quote unquote, have the longest wheelbase, the most spacious interior, the best acceleration performance and the lowest total cost of ownership. Big stuff. It almost sounds like a Trump press release.
Yes, it does.
So, quite interesting car, right, Daniel?
It is very interesting. And the fact is, we didn't hear much about it until recently. And, you know, Turkey is going into this car manufacturing thing. They don't mention who's the partner, who's the battery supplier, you know. Do they have any joint ventures going ahead? Are they moving into left-hand drive, right-hand drive market or what? So, it might be actually just a lot of like our third national car program.
Hot air.
Yeah, it might be. Or maybe they really got something serious going on. We don't know because there's enough millionaires in Turkey to do this.
Looking at it, glancing, it looks like a Mitsubishi though.
Actually, you're right, Richard.
Very much like a Mitsubishi.
It could be a joint venture with them, but they're not saying anything right.
Sneaky.
What they are saying, however, is some specs from their press release. Single motor powering the rear wheels, 300 kilometers of range. Apparently, the top model will get two motors at 400 horsepower, more range, that's 500 kilometers, and rapid charging, which is pretty cool. But like we've begun to mention a lot in the past, when we talk about electric cars, they all start to sound the same.
That's because they pretty much are, right? They're all stuck with the same kind of battery developers, pretty much. They can only have a similar kind of amount of range depending on how heavy they are and what they're carrying inside them. Yeah.
From a car with no sound and not much change to a car that has not much change but lots of sound is the Porsche 911 GT3. It's the brand new one based on the 992 911, and it's the ultimate track-ready street car. So this new GT3 gets completely new suspension from their race cars. They get big 16-inch brakes, a massive wing, carbon fiber panels, and some gills on the bonnet. All in all, it's quite pretty, and I think it's worth a mention because there were some rumors that Porsche was going to, you know, start some sort of assembly here.
Yes, but I think the assembly is not for performance cars or performance vehicles. I think it's more for EV.
All right, let's move along then.
We'll move along straight to the car review.
A car review of the Honda Accord 1.5 TCP review. Executive alternative.
Why did it take so long to review this car?
Yeah, Daniel.
Yeah, it took a long time because of, you know, the lockdown and everything else. And, you know, it's not easy to get test cars. Different offices were closed and everything else. But that really doesn't matter. The reason why we're highlighting this car today is simply this. How many have you seen on the road?
Two. Oh, I saw a few in a bunch of photographs on the newspapers when some ministers got new Accords.
Yes, but have you seen them on the road?
No.
This model, Richard, have you seen them on the road?
Actually, no, looking at it.
Yeah, the previous model, you probably saw hundreds or even 1,000. Yeah. But this model is so rare, I think because it's not doing well in the market at all. And the reason is very simple. It's not that it's not a good car. It's not that it doesn't have a good drivetrain. It's not that the Honda Accord name is not popular anymore. It's just the segment, you know?
Yeah.
This segment is a segment that has got a very, very slow death. And it includes the Mazda 6, the Hyundai Sonata, the Toyota Camry, the Kia K6, K7. And the reason is very simple. Nobody wants to get into a sedan this size when, for the same amount of money, you can get into a large SUV.
Yeah. Or step down to a smaller sedan, I guess.
True. But I think it's more because of the SUVs. You know, if you walk into a showroom today, this is 185,900 with the discount.
Yeah.
Now, you walk in there, it's got a lot of features. It's spacious, it's nice and everything else. But if it's in the showroom sitting next to, say, a Honda CR-V, and the CR-V is 20,000 less, and the CR-V looks bigger, taller, wider, bigger wheels, immediately you're drawn to the CR-V. And you say, oh, you know, I'm going to be sitting up higher. I've got more space. I've got the bigger boot at the back. Or I've got a commanding view. And, you know, yeah, okay, maybe the CR-V is not as fast as this car. Maybe the CR-V doesn't handle as well as this car because this car is lower, planted, longer. But people want SUVs. Malaysians want SUVs. So this is the biggest problem with this segment. So we took this car out for a test drive. Immediately, you will understand if you see the car for yourself, it's got a rather unusual look.
I kind of like it.
Yeah. The front is very interesting. It's very Honda-ish. But the rear, those tail lamps, that fastback design is very unlike the Accord.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
Accord has always been a real proper sedan. But then again, you know, as people's tastes change, someone had a focus group somewhere in Japan and said, oh, I think the new Accord should be a fastback and let's give it a fastback. But it's something that can grow on you. Either you like it or maybe you don't quite like it. And then when you get inside, now, if you ever get a chance to have a look at this car close up, the interior quality is much better than the previous one. Okay, mm-hmm. They've actually taken the trouble to look at all little features, all little points of, you know, the touch and feel points, and just make it a little bit better. And that's what an all-new car is all about. You've got to make it better inside and outside.
Mm.
Because why? If you're a current Honda Accord owner, that means you own one like 4 or 5 years old. If you want to upgrade to the new model, if you go into the showroom and look and see, it's just a new shape, you'll say, maybe I'll look somewhere else.
Yeah.
But if you notice a whole different interior, a whole different cabin, and that's where you spend most of the time.
Yeah.
You know? So if you see everything looking very different, very upmarket, touch and feel points much better, you've got, you know, more safety features. Like this car, it's got lane watch, all the new Honda sensing features which were not available in the older model, then you'll say, hey, I think I'm going to invest in this car if I'm still looking for a sedan.
Yeah.
Now comes the driving. Okay, this is where I'm a little bit disappointed. Not to say that we want to go fast all the time, but that 1.5 engine, you know, the Accord has always been known as a cruiser, you know, a highway, you know, something that you can take on the highway and do 110, 120, 130 easily. And then if you really want to test the speed limit and test, you know, your resilience against a PDRM, you can go a bit faster. But you're not supposed to. But still, there'll be people who want that. Now, with the 1.5 engine, getting to that speed takes a little bit of time because this is a big and heavy car.
This is the same engine that they put in the Civic and the CR-V, right?
Yes, it is.
But isn't the CR-V a bit more heavier than this Accord?
Exactly, exactly. But somehow or other, this car doesn't feel faster than the CR-V.
Yeah.
You know, for me. But maybe because, you know, I drove the CR-V 3 years ago and 3 years ago, you can't really tell. But you would want the new Accord to be a bit more brawnier. But then again, you know, everybody is downsizing. Everybody is saying we need to get smaller capacity engines. We need to get more fuel efficient. You know, there's a way of saving, you know, the environment and everything else. So I think 1.5 is a necessity because why? The new Mercedes-Benz and BMWs are even smaller.
That's true.
You know, the engines are even smaller with big turbochargers. So as you drive it, you'll see, okay, it's, in the city is fine. It's comfortable. Rear seat, spacious, is great. Someone like Richard can sit in the back. I can sit in, right in front of him and drive the car. And Richard will have no problem with legroom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Boot space, a lot of boot space because of the fastback design. But not as big as the CR-V, of course, because that's bigger. So you have all the qualities that say, hey, I want, you know, take this car out for test drive. You got rear seat aircon. You got power seats. You've got, you know, a nice audio system. So in all, it's a pretty decent product. And it's priced within its relevant rivals. But the sad thing is, the segment is shrinking.
It's a good car, but one of the last of its kind.
True. And the sad thing is, I think after this, the next generation Accord that comes, you know, they might even decide to say, no point selling it in Malaysia.
Mm. Does it just feel then like it's the middle child almost, you know? It's neither here nor there, if you see what I mean.
True. And the thing is, you see, if you go back 15, 20 years, the Honda Accord was probably the best-selling product in the Honda lineup.
Mm.
Everybody dreamed of owning a Honda Accord before they get into a Mercedes-Benz, you know?
I think also, like, because this Honda Accord is somewhat popular in, you know, in the Western markets, like the US, and the North American markets,
true,
and a bit of the Europe. But I think it also has to do with the way we prefer our sedans to be. Because, yes, the D-segment sedan, your Camrys, nobody's really buying them anymore.
Right.
But some of them have migrated down towards like a Civic or something. And when we think of sedans these days, we think of the car that you buy because you can afford it. It's not a car that you want to settle with, if you get what I mean.
Yes.
And if you're young, you will buy something else.
Yes.
Or you couldn't afford to buy something.
And the other problem is, you see, with a lot of Malaysians now, previously when you talk about fleet purchases for company cars,
yeah,
first thing when you do well, you become a manager, you get something like an Accord or a Camry or a Hyundai Sonata, right?
Yep.
No one ever looks at an SUV or a crossover. But mm-hmm. today, when you go into some companies, their fleet purchasers are actually SUVs and crossovers.
Mm.
So the buyer perception, the way of thinking that, you know, I must have a sedan, is slowly fading away. So this is the problem. Will cars like this continue to be, you know, brought in and sold and assembled and everything else? Or will car manufacturers like Honda say, I think I'll just have a few units of the Accord fully imported in just for the few loyal customers who love that Accord name. But meanwhile, I will just keep on, you know, selling SUVs and crossovers. Because that's what Hyundai has done. The Sonata and Elantra are now fully imported. There's no point doing local assembly because the market is shrinking.
Yeah.
And with Toyota, I think the Corolla and Camry, so, you know, there might be a decision very soon. With Mazda, look at the Mazda 6 and the Mazda 3. very good looking cars, great features, but also the sales are shrinking and the SUV sales are increasing.
Mm.
So it's sad, but the D segment is fading away.
Oh dear.
I guess we'll know it's dead when the ministers start changing away from that, right? Start getting CRVs and everything.
Well, looks like they'll be getting Proton X70s more than anything else.
Yeah, maybe.
Righty. Should we have a bit of an inspection, though?
I think we should.
Okay. Who are its competitors then?
Okay. Like I mentioned, the Mazda 6,
yeah.
The Hyundai Sonata, the yeah. Toyota Camry, you know, these are the immediate competitors. And, you know, they are also not doing very well in that segment.
And it's not even competitively priced, is it?
Well, I think it's priced right there alongside all of them because this car is very, very well equipped when you compare with the older Honda Accord. So side by side, it's all priced quite equally.
All right. And what is good about it before we get on to what's not good about it?
What's good about it is I'm actually very impressed with the interior because from the older model to this, they've done a good job with taking the interior way forward and the safety features, of course.
Mm.
What's not good about it, though?
What's not good about it? For me, I would say the design. I'm not taken by that fastback design.
It's kind of the trend towards these sedans. They're almost like evolving in a different way, right?
If you look at the new Kia Optima and you look at the new Hyundai Sonata, beautiful looking sedans, right?
Yeah.
They kept to their traditional shape, but they gave it such dynamic appeal. So I think, you know, previous Honda Accords used to have the dynamic appeal. And, you know, there are always three or four models after they'll make a sort of design mistake and then they'll come back on the right path.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think this is one of those times when they like veered off the right path and then the next Honda Accord is going to be like, wow, you know?
Final question. If you are one of three people that's looking for a D-segment sedan, Camry, Hyundai Sonata, Honda Accord, Volkswagen Passat, what stands out?
I would say the Hyundai Sonata.
Still the Sonata.
I have to say it because it is a very, very dynamic looking design.
Yeah,
you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm not really taken by this particular design.
Fair enough.
All right, then. Well, he's a ray of sunshine today, isn't he?
Yes!
We'll be back in just a few moments. You are tuned into Cruise Control, that car show here on BFM. We'll be right back where we're having a little bit of a chatty-watty, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
This is BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. Into part three. I don't think I've been part of a part three before so far here on the show. What are we talking about?
Yeah, so we are going to be looking at some press releases from car manufacturers and the PR office. There's quite some interesting stuff to talk about this week. But I think I will start with Mercedes-Benz Malaysia because we just came off that discussion in the afternoon where they wanted to talk about their plans in 2021 and perhaps reflect a bit on 2020. As we know, pandemic last year, the SSD exemption came into effect. Mercedes said, you know, the SSD exemption was good. People still bought a lot of Mercedes cars. They pivoted digitally. As we spoke about a few weeks ago, there was a few dealers who were issuing VSSs to their employees because they were, you know, going through this digital shift where they have virtual showrooms and all of those funny stuff that you can do online these days.
Right. But they're still going to have the physical showrooms. It's just that they're scaling down on the showroom appeal because there will still be people going into showrooms to buy cars.
Yes.
Maybe instead of going three times to a showroom, the first two times you do it online. And then the third time is just, you know, I've narrowed down what I really like. I go into the showroom to meet the salesman and test drive the car.
Yep. And I guess, the virtual showroom is a pretty good place to mess with the specs of your car if you want to figure out whether you want it in blue or red or silver or gray or white.
True.
But in any case, this year they have also mentioned that they're going to continue to push production. They're going to continue with new technologies. Most specifically, they are going to be focusing a lot on the SUVs and compact cars department, which, Daniel, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like they'll be focusing on like the GLA, GLB, the A-Class, the B-Class, all of those little cars.
True. Of course, the new C-Class is coming.
Yes, the new C-Class is coming. There will be a new facelifted E-Class as well, right. The new S-Class. So actually more than just SUVs and compact cars to expect from Mercedes this year.
It's going to be a very, very busy year, but you know, whether the economy is busy enough to absorb all this.
Yeah. So one of the things that they wanted to talk about in this press conference really was a clearer picture of the government incentives that may help them sell cars. And it's something that we've talked about for so long, like clearer localized regulations, tax breaks that would help auto manufacturers make their own decisions on certain things. Mm. Right now, as far as we've talked, it just seems like everything's, you know, done on the fly. So
wing it.
Yeah, just winging it. Apart from that, actually, I got the feeling that it was kind of hard for Mercedes to establish any clear direction for 2021, mainly because they don't know how everything is going to play out. We're still stuck in the MCO. We don't know where we're going to move in the future. Mm. But they have said that, Daniel, I don't know much about how the MAA collects like its sales figures and everything, but Mercedes-Benz Malaysia was one of the companies that didn't submit their 2020 sales to MAA because they believe that new car registrations is a more reliable way of gauging company's performance or their success in a certain market, not sales and production figures as we've done recently. Is that right? I mean, I don't know much about it.
I can't agree with that because, you know, in the past, during the good times, they had events every month, every quarter, explaining how well they're doing against their rivals. Mm. So if you suddenly stop giving out these figures, the only thing I can think of is your rival has overtaken you.
And you don't want to release the figures.
Right. And for the first time in 18 years, BMW has become number one against Mercedes-Benz in Thailand. So I'm not saying that, you know, you don't want to be number two, but for a lot of car companies, when you've been number one for a long time, when you get into number two, it's very disappointing. And, you know, someone upstairs is going to get very upset.
Yeah. I think having said that, it looks to be a very, very positive year for Mercedes-Benz. Throughout 2020, we were always talking about press launches of them responding very, very quickly to these changes in SOPs and everything.
Very true.
So they've been very, very steadfast, I guess, on launching their cars despite of all this. They've been doing a lot of virtual stuff.
But also, you must understand, their dealers have spent a lot of money upgrading their showrooms to follow the new CI, the new look and feel. These are all million-dollar showrooms. And now, a lot of these million-dollar showrooms are not generating enough money to pay back those costs, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
So you got to see both sides. I mean, for Cycle and Carriage to issue VSS letters, there is a problem. And of course, the premium market is such in Malaysia, there's only so many Malaysians who can buy a premium car. Mm. And if they bought it all in 2020 during the first sales tax discount, you can't expect a whole new group to come and buy. Because why? The economy is not actually getting better. If anything, it's going down a little bit.
Yeah, it's contracting.
Yes. So you will not have a lot of new people wanting to buy a new Mercedes-Benz or BMW or Audi or any premium car. The super premium cars will carry on selling because why? That's a whole different band of people. Mm.
I did ask them before the PC ended that we've been hearing a lot of news about other car manufacturers investing in this region about electric vehicle production and parts manufacturing and all those stuff. So I asked them, are they going to be doing anything like that in Malaysia? And they said, well, it depends on consumer demand for electric vehicles and the government incentives given. So that's what they said.
Indonesia and Thailand have already made it very clear. It's written out. There's a website you can go and actually see what incentives they're given to all these companies to come and invest there. In Malaysia, there's nothing. It's all just, you know, it's a guessing game. Mm.
It's like Facebook Marketplace where everybody, you know, sells everything for one ringgit, but it's always nego for best price.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
PM.
Yes, exactly. PM. So, end of the day, no big OEM brand is going to say, hey, I'm going to take millions and come here without a clear and defining statement, you know, that is written in a document. And on top of that, we have certain issues with our current government. Is the current government going to stay? Is it going to be changed? You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Because this is a lot of investment. So, they might just say, listen, we'll just carry on as is. We'll just stay safe and watch and see what happens. Meanwhile, we'll push a lot of money into Indonesia and Thailand. And if Malaysia suddenly changes its tune and does something really solid, we can adapt quickly. Because why? We still have that whole AFTA thing going on.
Yep, that is true. Anyway, I think we should stop talking about Mercedes-Benz there because there was one other press release, specifically from Perodua, that I think quite confused me a little bit. So over the past decade or so, since 2011, Purdue has been actively, you know, transforming the business. They've got new strategies and all that stuff and KPIs to reach within certain timeframes. So they wanted to up their games in terms of quality, customer satisfaction, fuel efficient cars, you know, with the whole EEV thing. And then they've gone through a lot of internal changes that saw them export more cars. They built more components and even work closer with Toyota and Daihatsu, all of which are super evident in the locally designed and produced Myvi. So they are in a good place right now.
Yes, they are in a very good place right now. And the fact that, you know, they're going to start selling these cars pretty soon. They're going to launch a new car very soon, in a few weeks' time.
It's the small SUV.
Yes, it's a small, it's actually a crossover. It's not even an SUV. I think this is just a, you know, the first of a few building blocks of press releases they're going to release until that car is launched to say, hey, we've done all this. We've moved our ecosystem up. We're talking to all our network. We're talking to all our dealers. This is to give confidence that when we launch the car, we are on a next level of quality and technology and everything else, which they have to do to stay ahead of Proton, because Proton with Geely has moved the game far forward. The goalpost is far forward. And Perdua has always been, you know, very conservative. This time, they got to move the goalpost again, much far forward, to tell people, hey, my cars may be well-priced, but that doesn't mean I'm skimping on anything.
They're trying to reinforce confidence, aren't they?
Yes.
They also mentioned that they're working with business partners to rationalize the gap in quality, the gap in cost and delivery within that automotive ecosystem, and get that get the industry to be in, quote unquote, in the right size.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was the part that I didn't quite understand, because, you know, what is the right size for the Malaysian automotive market? What is the right size of production for Perodua? And how are they willing to help out the automotive industry that way?
Well, helping out the automotive industry is very simple, Arif. End of the day, you want to keep all the vendors still thriving, still making money. You want to keep all the people that help the automotive industry, like logistic guys, trailer guys, dealers, paint shop, accessory market, tinted glass. You know, all these are all supporting industries, all still, you know, able to make some money and then put money back into the local economy. Yeah. So that's the right way of doing something for the ecosystem. But if you are doing business and all your profits are going out of the country and not revolving back in the economy, that's not the right way for building the ecosystem, especially when you want to come out of a pandemic like this.
Yeah, and people are going to get super annoyed by it.
Yes.
So from what I get, I guess, from this press release is that Proto is really going to do a lot of things this year to prove that they are moving forward and, I guess, challenging Proton on a fair level.
Or they are actually a proper national car company.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Either that or they're trying to convince us that they are.
Yes.
In the right size.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned a lot of that, right? You know, third national car and what is exactly a national car. And I guess Perodua is stating the claim that, you know, despite being owned by Toyota or Daihatsu, or technically just rebadging those cars, for example, the Myvi is a completely Malaysian product, is it not?
Mm. Yes.
I guess that's what they're trying to say. Anyway.
We should wrap up.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of this episode of Cruise Control here on BFM. Thank you for joining us. And if you missed any part of the show, don't forget you can listen back to the show however you'd like. I'd recommend using that BFM app. It's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play. If you don't want to do that, head over to bfm.my or get us on Spotify. You can listen to us there as well. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Arif Ruz and Daniel Fernandez from dsf.my, this has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.